Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews.
Thanks, Mike. Gina and I are happy to be here.
Starting off September with lots of announcements.
Concerts, a film series, and a play. Lots coming up.
But we're starting this show with a startling update on COVID in Iowa's Black community. For that report, we welcome Dana James, founder of Black Iowa News. Hello, Dana. Glad to have you with us.
Hello. Hello, Susan. Thanks for having me on. How are you this morning?
Well, it's an exciting morning.
Yes, it is.
Dana, explain how you started the Black Iowa News in the spring of 2020. I believe that you started writing because of your concern with COVID. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. So last May of 2020, I was seeing, you know, all of the news stories, of course, about how COVID was decimating Black communities out east and down south. And I had real concerns about how it would impact us here in the Midwest. And so I had pitched some stories to a Black coronavirus newsletter while I was waiting for that journalist to get back to me. I decided to just go ahead and start my own thing. And so I started the newsletter. Since then, I've moved from Substack. I'm now found at blackiowanews.bulletin.com. which is a Facebook platform that recently 25 journalists from across the country are now on the Bulletin platform. And so I'm one of two in Iowa. So that's really cool. And, you know, again, since then, I've been writing about, you know, how COVID has affected us. And, you know, it is startling that, you know, essentially 8 months after the vaccines, life-saving, life-preserving vaccines got to the state that, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Black Iowans are vaccinated with one dose at 25% compared to white Iowans at 49%. So Iowa has one of the biggest white to Black gaps in vaccination among the 40 states that the Kaiser Family Foundation had analyzed. And so a low vaccination rate here in the state among Black Iowans is a problem. And especially with the Delta variant doing the kind of damage that it is doing in terms of it being super highly transmissible. You know, I'm sure you're aware, Susan, that the Delta variant can affect up to 8 people. So one person can affect up to 8 people. So compared to essentially last year's coronavirus, which was one person could affect up to like 2 people. So it's, you know, easier to catch. There are some, you know, essentially in the Des Moines area, there are some high profile people who have died of, you know, COVID-19 here recently, one of those being Broderick Day. A lot of people in the city knew Broderick. He did a lot of, you know, philanthropy work, you know, was involved in a fraternity and just was all around great guy. And so it is taking a toll on the Black community and is something that, you know, I've written kind of extensively about.
Yeah, no, I think that it's also going back to early 2020, you were at the Des Moines Register at the time that they had their great reshuffling, I guess is what you could kindly call it, where they really lost a lot of people. And so that you are really very well-qualified reporter, and you've even won awards for your journalism. So it's wonderful that you're available to cover this. but it's a horrible story to have to cover. So what are you doing with this right now?
So right now, I just came off of reporting a series for that I received a grant from the National Association of Black Journalists, NABJ. I received a grant to write about how COVID was affecting Black communities. And so I've written, the series is called Unprotected. You can find it at blackiowanews.bulletin.com. And I spend roughly 2 months. The first part of the series was about how the fact that Iowa state leaders had politicized the pandemic and how that affected the Black community. The second part of the series looked at vaccination. It looked at the rates. It looked at all of the different barriers to Blacks getting vaccinated in terms of access and technology and things like that. I even drilled down to needle phobia and things like that. I interviewed doctors of color at the University of Iowa and an epidemiologist of color. And so that was really great. The third part of the series looked at essentially how bias in healthcare affects Blacks in this time of the pandemic, because I was seeing a lot of stories where the stories were saying that Blacks were turned away from the hospitals 2 and 3 times, and then they died of COVID at home. And so that was a real concern to me. What could Black Iowans do to protect themselves against the virus, you know, if they went to the hospital and they were turned away? So it was really giving some solutions.
But it's hard to understand with this much information out, I mean, that Blacks are so resistant to getting vaccinated. Do you have any insights into that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of things. Like, for example, recently, last Saturday, I partnered with Christ Apostolic Temple here in Des Moines on the east side. The church is roughly has about 500 members. And for the last 6 to 8 weeks, we worked at holding a vaccine clinic here on the east side of Des Moines. And so we did a lot of work in terms of marketing it, you know, translating flyers into Spanish, making sure that all of the area schools and organizations had flyers. I spent a lot of time talking to, you know, people in the community, small business owners, about the, you know, us having the clinic, because our goal with it really was just to make sure that we as a community had eliminated the barrier of access. So any kind of last holdouts that were somewhat hesitant about getting the vaccine, you know, we wanted to bring the vaccine into the neighborhood and help people surmount some of those barriers. You know, getting vaccinated, obviously it's been politicized. There's lots of misinformation and disinformation about the vaccine still rolling around. Some of it's intentional. And so maybe some people, you know, don't want to necessarily at this stage go into a busy pharmacy where maybe they don't know the pharmacist. Maybe they don't want to get vaccinated that way. So we really thought, hey, let's just bring the vaccination clinic into the neighborhood and make it easy. We did a lot of partnering. The bishop and the pastor at Christ Apostolic Temple, Dwight Reed, his company, Aeon Studios, they created a video that went out. We called our event was Roll Up, and we partnered with Hy-Vee. So we had two pharmacists come out on Saturday for 3 hours, and we were all set up. Also, the AARP of Iowa donated really beautiful gift boxes that would go to each participant. It contained full bottle of hand sanitizer, full bottle of Gatorade, tissues, the thermometer, a cloth mask. And so also at the same time, the church was having a giveaway where they were giving away boxes of food. So meat and canned goods and pasta and cereal and things like that. So we really wanted to make the vaccination clinic that we had on the east side last Saturday easy for people. We did a lot of advertising. And at the end of the day, when we were there, we received 13 people came to the clinic in a 3-hour period. And so while the clinic was going on, I was really encouraged because we had two young Vietnamese young men from the neighborhood that were vaccinated first. The next people that came through was a white couple. Then we had a Black family come through, a Black grandmother with her two grandsons. So, and then other people came through all the way up to probably about 70, 75 years old. So, you know, while the clinic was going on, I was really encouraged that, you know, people were trickling in. And even one gentleman was really hesitant all the way till the time that he sat down in the chair with the pharmacist. He was still hesitant. We had a nurse on hand, Monica Goodlett, who does a lot of things in the community, a longtime nurse, Black nurse. She, right up until the point that he got his vaccination, she was like right behind, kind of helping to give him, you know, a little caring and support. So I really feel like we had everything set up for this to be a great event. The goal was to vaccinate 100 people. And, you know, at the end of the day, we fell short of that goal. We all left the event, I think, feeling very encouraged still. I left the event on a high because, you know, we had accomplished the goal of vaccinating people. I had heard from some healthcare professionals at Polk County and even Hy-Vee who said that some community-led vaccination efforts were, you know, notoriously had low turnout. And so I was aware of that, you know, that could be a problem. But still, ultimately, I was satisfied with the turnout. I think it was later on that I felt a little glum about, you know, the lack of, you know, say a long line or, you know, the lack of turnout. And I reached out to an epidemiologist at the University of Iowa's Carver College of Medicine to just kind of, you know, give me some perspective, like what difference did it make that we essentially had 13 people? And he really gave me some great information, and that's Dr. Eli. And essentially what he said is that, you know, number one, he kind of restated just how deadly, well, how serious the Delta variant is and the fact of how, you know, it is transmitted to other people. And, you know, that's really something that we're still in the middle of that Delta surge. So we all still need to be thinking about the fact that, you know, if you are infected with the Delta, you can spread it to 8 other people. He kind of restated for me that each fully vaccinated person is 60 to 80% less likely to get infected. So that's super important. He also let me know that, you know, vaccination reduces the risk of severe disease, hospitalization, and death across all age groups, 90 to 95%. And one of the main things that he told me was that if we vaccinated mostly older people, and we did have, you know, several older people, that we could have prevented 2 to 3 hospitalizations and maybe a death. And that was really encouraging for me to hear, because certainly the goal with Dwight Reed at Christ Apostolic Temple and I, in terms of putting this clinic together in our own neighborhood, you know, was to help people not have those terrible COVID, you know, effects. I mean, you know, there is long COVID, you know, with symptoms that persist, you know, out over time. You know, obviously the scientists are still studying all these different effects for mutations. So, you know, getting vaccinated still remains something that we really need to do, not, you know, across Iowa, you know, at large, but also, you know, especially in the Black community. Right now on the New York Times coronavirus tracking website, you know, for Iowa, it's showing COVID-19 cases, tests, and hospitalizations and death are all up. And so getting vaccinated isn't going away. It's something that a lot of experts said from the jump, you know, when this kicked off in March of 2020, we all knew a vaccine. That was the goal of getting vaccines. We've got three great ones that are really helping people stay out of the hospitals and things like that. And so, you know, vaccines and vaccinations remain critical. And again, that's why we really wanted to have the clinic. Overall, it was a great experience. And it was great to work with my community. The vaccination clinic, it was in my neighborhood. And, you know, being a part of helping to really protect my own neighbors, you know, that was important. It was important to me. And I'm just really glad that, you know, we had it. And I really encourage other people in their own communities to look around and think about ways that they can bring the vaccination to the people.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Such support. This is inspiring. Experiment, I guess, that you did. And thanks for letting us know how it turned out. And it's interesting that you also brought in Asian people. So that's another topic for another day.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Dana.
You're welcome.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and your hosts, Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews, have been talking with Dana James, founder of Black Iowa News, about the radical difference in vaccination rates between Black Iowans and White Iowans. Leaving that thought-provoking topic, we'll devote the rest of our program to a variety of events coming up in September. We'll start with a report from music reporter Greta Anderson about one of the shows featured at Shagstock next Saturday near Boone. The band is a cover of Oasis, and it has a pretty incredible story that Greta is eager to tell you about. If you want to know more about the all-day series of concerts at Shagstock, visit their Facebook page. It's pretty incredible.
Take the time to make some sense of what you want to say, and cast your words away upon the waves, and sail them home with acquiesce on a ship of hope today. And as they land upon the shore, tell them not to fear no more. Sing it loud and sing it proud today.
That is Oasis, a band of brothers from Manchester, England, whose recordings in the 1990s now reap Liam and Noel Gallagher millions of British pounds every year. A now defunct band that Boone, Iowa musician Dean Erickson says has never been hotter, with lots of internet chatter about the brothers estranged and now with their own solo careers, possibly, definitely maybe, getting back together. And this is Masterplan, the Oasis tribute band that Dean has assembled, which will debut on September 4th at a festival known as Shagstock in rural Boone, Iowa. When I got to Dean's house for our interview, he wanted to show me an album of another Manchester band, the Stone Roses, a band he caught on to in 1990. You see, his love affair with Oasis got off to a rocky start. He had an irrational hate of the band for years.
going back to where Oasis came from, there's a band called the Stone Roses in England. They put out an amazing album in 1989. It, like, changed the culture of this town of Manchester completely. It's an industrial town. It used to be a real hellhole, and it was a tough place to grow up in the 90s and 80s and stuff. Stone Roses, they really kind of changed the culture, and one of the people that was watching was, you know, the guys that would form Oasis. Oasis comes out in 1995, and, you know, I've got the cassette, and it's like, oh, that kind of sounds like Stone Roses, and that's pretty cool, it's different, and kind of give it a chance, and it got more popular, and then I remember the Stone Roses came out with their comeback album, and it just bombed in America, and I was so mad at Oasis forever, for decades. I just couldn't stand them.
What do you mean you're mad at Oasis?
They kind of took the throne away from the Stone Roses. So anyways, the Stone Roses reformed in 2013, I think, and I got to see one of the reunion shows in 2017. I met all these English people that were big fans of the Stone Roses, and just partying with them, like Oasis with some of these people, was like this like a religious thing I noticed, and I was like, why? I don't get it. They're like, check out this album, Definitely Maybe, and this album, Definitely Maybe, a pretty amazing album. I picked it up and I checked it out, and yeah, it's really fun. It's a totally rock and roll album. It's like, you know, if you want to drink a few beers and party to an album, this is the album to do it to. And so I was like, okay, I became a casual fan, and then still hanging out with the Stone Roses people, and I went to a couple shows in Glasgow, Leeds, and they would talk to me more about it, and I realized how it really meant something. The Oasis, like, what meant something big. Like, it was hard to understand. And then I remember there was like a mob of people after the Stone Roses show, and this old guy came out and he was playing a guitar on the street, a bucket hat on and a Oasis shirt, and all these young people around him just belting it out like to the sky. Like, it was like a religious experience almost. And then, yeah, hanging out with friends who would sing so loud in the bar, it was like just like the windows were shaking. It was awesome.
So after his trip to Scotland in 2017, Dean was definitely curious about Oasis, but it wasn't love, not yet. That all changed in 2020.
So during the pandemic, there was when it was really bad, scary, you know, April of 2020, that was just the biggest comfort. Like the song Once, it was the biggest comfort to me.
Here's part of that Liam Gallagher song, Once, that comforted Dean in the early days of the pandemic.
I think it's true what they say, that the dream is borrowed. You give it back tomorrow, minus the sorrow. And that pain, she just comes in to break up the daydream. A knife that she's waving to keep from feeling the same thing.
I basically, during the pandemic, like, I started listening to Liam albums, and it kind of just broke my heart, and, like, then I got into all these Oasis stuff, and I'm like, oh, it really made me feel good, and made me feel really confident, and, like, I was like, it'd be really fun to make a band like this, because I'd be the keyboard player. I could pretend like I'm the string section, or the brass section, or the little panel parts, the organ parts that you can hear in the live versions. There's a lot of live versions you can go listen to. So I was like, oh, that'd be fun. And I didn't think it would ever happen or anything. So I posted on Facebook, I think, and right away, like, a bunch of people signed up, and it was, like, really good musicians. Brian Dudley, Rachel Dudley, and the Hummer Brothers, and Mark Bailey. Mark Bailey is, like, a solo artist, and he's a huge Oasis fan, and...
Yeah, we've had him on KHOI.
Yeah, and he does a solo act, and he's put out awesome albums. But he's a really big Oasis fan that really influences his songwriting.
Yeah, he's a singer-songwriter.
Right.
Through and through.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, yeah, heck yeah, we'll sign up. And the Dudleys.
Of course.
The Dudleys weren't that familiar with Oasis, but were intrigued. And I hung out with the Dudleys, and I showed them some videos, and they're like, wow, this sounds cool. Let's do it.
You indoctrinated
them. Yeah, so I indoctrinated them. I indoctrinated as many people as I can. That's the whole idea of the master plan. it's an album and a song, but it's got a kind of cool message. You know, we're all part of the master plan, and I thought that would be, you know, like a, you know, it could be a band where anyone could be in it. You know, people could kind of come and go. And we know with like 7 people in the band, and I don't want them to go because they're awesome.
Wow, 7 people.
Yeah,
getting 7 people together is not easy.
2 drummers.
Oh, 2 drummers.
2 drummers, and
they well,
and
you know, they work great Oasis together. Has a really loud sound. I mean, it seems like it's really full,
right? And loud. Especially their stage sound. There's some tricky stuff because there's some weird stuff, just weird stuff they do. But it's not, you know, there's no virtuoso stuff going on. But it's like cool songwriting. Writing stuff, and it's really fun to play because it's like, wow, that's interesting. It's like, you know, just went to that chord, and that's just a weird thing to do, but it sounds cool.
Is it your habit to sort of become infatuated with the band?
Kind of. I mean, I really get into bands. I think Oasis was the biggest one I think I've ever, you know, experienced. It's like, that's kind of what I've been, you know, I kind of feel like that's what I've been looking for all my life, in a band. So, I don't know what it is. I experienced a lot of depression problems and I've tried to take meds for that and it doesn't really help, but, the day I really decided I really loved Oasis, really decided that was a big part of my life, it's like that just went away. And I mean, I still have some depression and stuff, but like the really bad thoughts that I used to have just were, you know, I can just shrug them off really easily now. And that is like a common theme, actually. It's something about the delivery and the lyrics, you know, that just give you a little confidence. I don't know, it's just like good medicine for me, I guess.
That's amazing. I mean, it really is. It's huge that a band and its music, particular songs, can be such medicine for people. I think that's a pretty universal
thing. Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, it could be any band for you. For me, this is what it is, and a lot of people, and so that's why I kind of want to, like, hey, maybe if you blab about it for 200 people, maybe 3 of the people will like it.
I think after listening to you talk about Oasis and your passion for it, we are going to be pretty geared up to hear you play. Is it September 4th?
September 4th, yeah.
The Saturday of Labor Day weekend out at Shagstock.
Yes.
Rural Boone.
Like. My main band is Obsidian's Dream. You go to Obsidian's Dream website, you can probably find the event for Shagstock. And,
Obsidian's Dream, okay.
Obsidian's Dream, yeah.
That's awesome. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
I mean, like you did. You posted on Facebook how you had got goosebumps, right?
Or, oh, yeah. Oh, man. And then dance if you want to dance. Please, brother, take a chance. You know they got.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. And your hosts for today are Gina McAndrews and I, Susan Franzen. The balance of the show will be something very different. Gina has invited Mike Kellner of Prairie Rivers of Iowa, who will be telling us about a film series that they're doing at the end of this month and the beginning of October. Gina, do you want to welcome Mike and find out what he has to tell us about?
Hello, Mike. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me.
I think Prairie Rivers of Iowa has a few events coming up in the near future.
Well, we do. We just finished up a couple of great events, so we're on to the next one. And that will be our Wild and Scenic Film Festival coming up. And I know you're talking about September events this morning, but this one's actually October 1st, so just right around the corner. But some of the events associated with that will actually start the day before on September 30 days or 31 days. So 30th, I guess, September 30th. But the film festival is Friday night, October 1st, and runs from 6:30 to 10 at the and will be held at the City of Ames Auditorium. So working with some great partners, of course, City of Ames, but they're wonderful people to work with and great partners on a lot of our projects. So be held there. The film festival itself's a collection of documentary style films that kind of celebrate our environment. So that ties in with the work that we do on conservation practices and education and implementation, water quality work that we do, again, with a number of partners throughout central Iowa. As well as habitat and prairie restoration and on. So it's a wonderful film festival. There's going to be 8 films. It's going to open with, and they're all again on the conservation, ecology, environmental theme. You know, talking about water quality, native plant and habitat restoration, sustainable environmental practices, whether you're on your farm or in your backyard or, you know, conservation areas throughout the nation. But a lot of it really is relatable to what is happening right here in central Iowa. So the first film is going to be 24 Leeches, which is really fun, real heartwarming kind of family adventure about a father, son, who call each other best friends and adventure partners and document some of their travels and adventures throughout Ontario, Canada, and really kind of how they look at not only bonding together over that, but how the ecology and conservation has become a big part of their life. And so real fun, heartwarming story to open up the film festival. There'll be some other ones. I know one of my favorites that's going to be is a film called Farm Ecology. And that's about really focusing on can farming and wildlife coexist. So it really talks about practices that you can do on your farm or actually even an acreage or piece of property you're trying to do some conservation on. So, sustainable practices, not only for soil, water, quality, but how you can do those practices and still maintain as well as farming and maintain habitat and native meadows and so on for wildlife, particularly on your buffer strip areas and those kind of things, as well as some good sustainable practices that really, this actually takes place in New York's Hudson Valley, but when I watched the film, the preview of the film, I was quite surprised on how relatable it is to what we're doing here in Iowa and the practices that we're working with people on, as well as a lot of our partners, particularly in Story County and the central Iowa watershed. So it's a wonderful film. Everybody's going to really like that. Great visuals as well as an important message. I know another one that's a favorite of our directors is called Through the Breaks. It's about a boat builder, actually, who does float down the upper Missouri River in eastern Montana. Just some spectacular views of just remote, not only remote river channels, but as unspoiled prairies and other landscapes and that kind of preservation work that's going on there and through the work of the American Prairie Reserve. And then, as I mentioned, a number of other films all related on the theme. There'll be some one about pollinators and agriculture, which I know is through our programming is of interest to a lot of folks that we work with in Central Iowa. But then it finishes up with a really great film from Iowa Public Television from their Land and Sky series. And the film is Iowa Cities, Towns, and Waterways. It's about exploring Iowa's largest cities and smallest towns, you know, that are often defined by the waterways that run through them. Ames is certainly one of those. You know, some of the recent challenges we've had with flooding and water quality and the environment that all goes along with that. So take a look at what some of Iowa cities are doing to work towards that. I know there's a lot of work with the city of Ames is doing with that as well. So that'll be featured in that film, and that'll be the finale film of the film fest. And, you know, not only kind of shows what's happening around the state, some of the challenges we face, but hopefully will inspire others to take a look at that a little deeper and help address some of the problems we're facing with not only water quality but flooding and recreation, navigation of our rivers, those kind of things as well.
Yeah. Well, that sounds pretty exciting. And where do people sign up or get tickets for this?
So, yeah, the tickets are available on our website, prrcd.org. And if you can't remember that or didn't get a chance to jot down, just search Prairie Rivers of Iowa. You'll find us real easy. You'll start seeing, you know, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram. We're putting out a lot of stuff starting this week about the film festival there. So you can always find info there. But tickets available right through our website. If all else fails, you can certainly purchase a ticket at the office, so which is on the west side of Ames. So that's all available. We've got some great sponsors.
And you want to talk a little bit about Prairie Rivers of Iowa?
I know a lot of people in the area are somewhat familiar with this, but the more we think people are familiar with this, the more we kind of realize that some people just don't know about us. So, because we do a lot of work behind the scenes and on the ground, so sometimes we're not always as visible as other groups. So what we do a couple of things. So we're kind of a unique non-for-profit. We are a non-for-profit organization works on, we focus on conserving natural resources and cultural resources, that make it short. So on the natural resources side, again, we focus a lot on water. Our programs focus on water quality. Specifically, right now, we're working with the City of Ames, Story County, and others in Central Iowa watersheds on a lot of water quality monitoring, particularly in the gaps that are missing in areas like the small creeks and rivers that the Iowa DNR just can't get to sometimes. So we're working on that. We've come up with worked with those folks on a 10-year monitoring program so we can get some consistent data and results over a 10-year period, and that has started, more better informed decisions can be made on how to solve some of those water quality issues, particularly with our, you know, current environmental situation we have now and climate situations. We, as we all know, we've had some major storm events and those kind of things, so a big part of focus on that is currently on doing some measurements directly after a storm event and seeing how that affects contaminants getting into our water, and help us again make some great decisions based on better data for that. And then the kind of the other side of that program is real exciting. People just love it. It's we're doing a lot of work on habitat restoration for pollinators and wildlife. So if you're interested in putting in a native pollinator garden in your backyard or your farm or acreage, we can certainly help out with that, as well as working. David on our staff is currently working on not only that and assisting landowners with that, but also doing some inventories of pollinator and wildlife species on a weekly basis. Probably the most exciting thing about that is just a recent rediscovery of some rusty patch bumblebees in the Ames area, which is the only endangered bumblebee in the continental United States, so listed on the endangered species list. So real important, and it's been exciting to see a comeback for that species, particularly in the Ames area, which is kind of on the western edge of the rings for that particular bumblebee. So good data to know, and again, that data can be used on where to help better identify what types of native plant restoration, some of their host plants, what plants they like, what areas they're gravitating to, and make some decisions on getting more of that habitat on the ground. And then on the flip side, and I know you guys kind of talked about this, had a great program last week about the Lincoln Highway Days over in Nevada. So our kind of piece of that is that we manage the Lincoln Highway Heritage Byway for the Iowa DOT. So that involves historic preservation, helping small businesses along the byway. I think I know, as Steve talked about a little bit last week, not that we don't want people using the bypass or the interstate when you got to get somewhere in a hurry, but encourage people to get off that main road, kind of take the, you know, the Lincoln Highway in particular, the byway. Really mirrors the route of the original Highway 30 across Iowa and nationwide. Actually, the Lincoln Highway, you know, goes from coast to coast. So we manage Iowa's little piece of that, which is actually one of the most popular pieces of it in the nation. So that's a lot of fun. Not only help with some historic preservation, but again, helping communities promote themselves. Helping with interpretation, making a better visitor's experience for travelers along the byway. And I know Jan talked, you guys had an archive of Jan, our now retired Lincoln Highway Byway, Heritage Byway coordinator. We miss her, but we're moving on. And I know she talked some about a lot about the history of that. So I know some of the listeners are pretty familiar with that. So that's kind of the flip side of what we do to as a counterpart to our conservation work.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mike. That's pretty overwhelming film series you're talking about.
Plus yeah.
The other work of the Prairie Rivers of Iowa. Now we're going to, for something completely different, we're going up to Webster City, where the Webster City Community Theater is opening its 2021-2022 season with a tribute on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Loween Getter, president of the WCCT, is here to tell us about it. Welcome, Loween.
Good morning, Susan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, hear you okay. Great.
I'm really happy to talk to you about the first show of our 2021-22 season. I'm directing a show called 110 Stories, and it is a play, which is actually a staged reading that was put together by the playwright Sarah Tuft. And Sarah, back 20 years ago on 9/11 and afterwards, actually interviewed eyewitnesses to the plane attacks on the World Trade Center, and also went down and interviewed rescue workers who were working at Ground Zero afterwards. And she compiled their firsthand experiences into a play called 110 Stories. There aren't 110 stories in the play. It's about the fact that the towers were 110 stories high. There are 27 characters in the play. And like I say, they range from eyewitnesses who maybe were homeless people to firemen and police officers, people that were in the building, all the way to the iron workers and the volunteers that came from all over as chiropractors or doctors or nurses to aid in the rescue. I have 17 seasoned actors who are portraying those characters, and it's going to be something different for our audience to do a staged reading. Because the stories are told in monologue and long paragraph form, they are able to use their scripts. So they will have scripts in hand on stage, which made it easy to audition because people said, oh, I don't have to memorize anything. And I said, well, you don't have to memorize it word for word, but you have to have a really good feel for what you're saying so that you're telling a story and not just reading words. The stage is basically a bare stage. We have an assortment of chairs or ladders and scaffolds for them to sit on as they enter the stage. Some of them enter and exit. Some of them play multiple characters. But there really isn't any dialogue where characters are talking to each other. They're basically talking to the audience and telling the story. So it breaks that fourth wall that we cherish so much in theater. The other important character of the show are the lights, because we've spent a lot of time adjusting lights and getting the light cues just right. So that as individual speakers are telling their stories, the light is on them. And so I think we have over 150 light cues. So God bless Sally Evans for agreeing to run the light board for this show. The other thing that might be different this time is that we are using projected images. So as the audience is entering our auditorium, during intermission and at the end of the show, we will be projecting images of scenes from 9/11 and from the recovery effort, and also photographs of the real people that our actors are portraying. And in the background, then, there will be an audio track running that includes news bites from that time. We hear President Bush making announcements, and we hear people on the ground making comments about what they're seeing and feeling. And that's backed up with lots of patriotic and American songs. Our show dates are September 10, 11, and 12, so they coincide with the 20th anniversary of 9/11. It's really hard for us to grasp the fact that all of that was 20 years ago already. When I think about, for example, my granddaughter and grandson who graduated this year in May, they weren't even born yet. And I had two granddaughters visit this summer, and one of them said, "What was 9/11?" And the other gal, who's just a great older than her, said, well, it happened in New York. So there are so many people who were not around 20 years ago or old enough to remember what happened on that fateful day. The rest of us, yeah, it's in our brains and it's there forever. So the show dates, like I said, are Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock on the 10th and 11th of September. And on Sunday, the matinee is at 2 o'clock. We are requiring that everyone be masked, whether they be vaccinated or not, as they sit in the audience. The cast at auditions were required to be vaccinated, and so we have been very fortunate to be able to do rehearsals in a safe environment. Do you have any questions, Susan?
Well, yeah, mostly just about the fact that this is your first play literally out of the dark. Is that right?
Yes. We shut down in the middle of our production in March of 2020. And we were hoping that maybe by July, we would be able to be open again last summer. And so we left the setup. And we had already postponed the Sound of Music. And come July, of course, we still were not able to turn off that ghost light on the stage and turn up the house lights. However, we did open the auditorium. We had a touring group come in from Des Moines to do Utopia, the Iowa Musical Review. And in August, we were back inside our auditorium for a musical review called Lyrics and Laughter. And so it was interesting to be back on the stage. It was heartwarming to see the audience back. Not full steam, but we respect, you know, that some people are not going to be comfortable being indoors to see a play yet. But with masks on, we're feeling that might make people feel a little bit more comfortable.
Do you have room enough to have any social distancing?
Well, we have a pretty intimate space. We seat 148. And so as people come to reserve their tickets, we can try to maintain some social distancing, but we won't be able to guarantee that.
Well, this really sounds like a very interesting play and extraordinarily timely. Yeah, for everybody who... That's something where everybody remembers where they were when they heard.
Exactly. Many times when we start a season, we do it with a comedy because it's just a good way to kick off the season. And this certainly is more dramatic than we usually have. Although there are some moments of levity. And I think by the end, people feel like the resilience of Americans still comes through. New York, of course, suffered, but they pulled through just like they did during the pandemic. They suffered and they're pulling through, and Broadway is hoping to open gracefully again. And there are a lot of people who are anxious to come back to live theater. And so by asking people to come and be concerned about their own health and that of their fellow theater lovers, the masks will help us keep our doors open so that we can do the rest of our season and keep bringing live theater to our area.
Well, thank you so much, Louine, and good luck to the Webster City Community Theater.
And thank you very much, Susan.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your host, Gina McAndrews, and myself, Susan Franzen. Our guests included Dana James, Greta Anderson, Mike Kellner, and Louine Getter.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At noon, you can hear a rebroadcast of Capital Week, originally aired Monday evening at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was The Master Plan by Oasis.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell all your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.